Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. An encounter with a nutbag from like a whole nother league.
Really?
It's another league of nutbags.
A new level of nutbag.
A new level of nutbag.
Nice.
Hey, Brian.
This makes me look like not a nutbag myself.
Really? Wow.
In comparison?
That impressive.
Wow.
Shadowed
That's
you.
That's bad.
Wow. Sensei.
That's bad.
Yeah.
I was at home. You know, I tend to speak up and put myself in crazy situations at times, but I have enough sense to back down when I need to, typically. But I was at Whole Foods a couple months ago. I just had my knee replaced, so I was really kind of hobbling around and using the carriage to get around. And there was this guy, and he had like this long, scraggly, blonde, bleached beard and super long gray hair. And he was kind of dressed funky, and there was something off about this guy. And anyway, he bumped into me a couple times because he was really impatient that I was walking so slowly. And so he kind of smacked the carriage, and I took notice and thought, what a jerk. Like, why would you do that? You see that I'm struggling, you know?
Yeah.
So later down in the shopping experience, I see the guy walking down the wrong aisle. And I know it's kind of a bit of a Karen moment when, you know, you correct somebody when they're walking down the aisle in the wrong direction. Because, you know, at Whole Foods, they have arrows and signs and, you know, anyone can see what direction to walk in.
You know what it is, though? This guy's already under your skin.
Right. So you're noticing things.
You're looking for something.
Exactly.
Heightened awareness.
Yeah. It's like when that car cuts in front of you in traffic.
Yeah.
There's nothing they can do after that. You're looking for that light where you could pull right up on them.
Yep.
Yeah.
No doubt. Yeah. And once I see something in my vision, it's all over with. So,
right.
So the guy. So I said to the guy, "Hey, dude, you're walking. Wrong aisle." And he looked at me and he said at the top of his lungs, you know, F you.
Oh.
You effing a blank.
Wow.
You're
oh, wow.
Screaming it.
Wow.
Yeah.
Screaming it.
That is not whole food behavior.
No.
No.
But he went from.
It's not polite society behavior.
There's
no, not at all.
There's no conversation.
No, just that. Said,
you're going the wrong way.
Right.
And pew, comes out at a 10
blank,
plus.
Blank, blank, blank,
well, there right. was nonverbal communication before
right.
that.
That is true.
Right. A lot of side
well,
eye.
The contact was him, you know, ramming into my carriage because I wasn't walking fast enough.
Right.
So there was something wrong with this guy.
Maybe the poop.
Clearly.
Right.
So I looked at him and I was kind of shocked and I was like, what? And he kept repeating it and he said it louder and used more F-bombs.
Oh,
and
okay.
So the guy at this point is probably 20 or 30 feet from me. And I said to him, why don't you, you know, the old typical Italian, hey, why don't you come over here and say that?
Right. Now you
a little closer.
Right.
Now, you,
great
now
idea.
You had, what, knee surgery? You're hobbling around and you think, yeah, this will be a good time to fight somebody.
Well, you know, take him out. Yeah.
I had a knee replacement and you used the carriage to kind of support me as I was walking down.
And you thought this was a good time to fight.
But it gets close enough.
I did. Yeah. I thought was not really an appropriate way to analyze
this. That's
there
true.
Was no thinking. At that point, it was just a reaction like, are you kidding me?
Right. Now it's
so,
on.
So I said, come here. And so he started walking towards me at a relatively fast pace.
Okay. So what's in your mind
yeah.
now?
Yeah.
Now it's fight time.
You're playing the shot.
He took me up on my offer.
Yeah.
What's next?
Grab the frozen peas.
Yeah, what no. can I throw at
no.
him? Yeah.
No, Lego lamb like a baseball
arm yourself
bag. Bammo.
With produce.
Okay, so I was not in the produce aisle, but luckily I was in the grape juice glass bottle aisle.
All right.
You
and he
maniac.
Walked at me and I grabbed a bottle of Welch's grape juice, super delicious.
Right.
And I cracked him in the head with it.
Are you serious?
Brian, you crushed his grapes. Awesome. Beautiful.
You're protecting
You're kidding.
Yourself. Yeah.
Exactly.
You're protecting yourself.
Not,
You're about to be assaulted.
I was going to be assaulted, and
right.
he was actually absolutely coming after me, and I was not going to have it. Luckily, the bottle did not break. It kind of bounced off his forehead.
Good
and,
shot.
It's too bad it wasn't like peanuts.
How,
assaulted.
Yeah.
How far away was he?
I killed him, though. Oh, he was right there. He was a foot from me. Like, I didn't have to really... you know, I didn't have to extend my arm too far to smack him in the head with a good shot.
Oh, the bottle wasn't flying through the air. You held on to it.
I had the lip of the bottle in my hands.
Like a bat, like a club, you hit him.
Correct.
Did you buy that jar after?
No.
Did his forehead have the little ring on the bottom of the jar to keep the bottle from sliding off the shelf?
Jim, sideways and like direct.
I think I hit him with the side of the bottom of the bottle.
Ooh.
So that's the thickest part of the glass there.
Right.
And so it just, and it's not like I took it and I tried to kill him.
Yeah, no, you didn't bust it first. Him. Yeah, like a beer.
The Welch's logo is ingrained in his forehead.
Right.
If I were living in Boston, I would have broken the bottle and stuck it in his face.
Exactly,
probably,
right.
But we don't do that here.
No. Yeah.
And so the guy, we were kind of both stunned at that point. The guy stepped back and he's, you know, he looked at me. He's like, what?
You hit with a grape?
Really?
Grape juice?
don't charge me again.
You sort of invited him.
Now, meanwhile, there's this poor innocent woman, like, within earshot. She's probably in the sauerkraut aisle, but she was, like, 5 or 6 feet away. You know, she had her carriage, and she was
Was she going in the right direction?
Now she was.
Yes, of course. She was right behind me. And she was really sweet. She was blonde and very pretty and, you know, dressed nicely. And she stopped and kind of watched this whole thing. And so after I hit him, he said, why don't you go F yourself and F that little whore wife of yours as well? Like, meanwhile, he's now talking about this.
Lumping her into one. Yeah.
He thinks you're married to
right,
her.
Right.
Yeah. And so she starts laughing and I start laughing. And then the guy oddly kind of walks back up to me and pecks me on the cheek, like blows me a kiss and then walks away.
Odd.
It was so bizarre. I didn't even know, like, should I kiss him?
Oh, my God.
Punch him again? What should I do? What do you do?
So Welch's squelches. Nice.
So people are just so angry. That's the problem. Everybody's so fed up with everything and every move. And you know, I was driving in the car last week, and some truck was kind of messing with me. And he got so mad that he tried to pass me on the shoulder, like at 70 miles an hour. This guy's driving on the shoulder to cut me off.
That was you?
Like, it was me.
Good.
But, you know, people, we've just got to be kinder. Like, me too, you know? We just got to be nicer. You know, like, let's just say that I had a wedding.
But you did say me too.
Yeah, I will agree. Let's just say that I got married and didn't invite one of my best friends. Like, my first reaction.
Did you want to take a grape juice jar and hit me in the head with it?
Champagne bottle.
I thought about it.
Here's some champagne. Bam.
Well, you're right, Brian. Yeah. You were completely in the right in all of that.
Yeah.
You know, inviting him to come to you, not a great move, but you were defending yourself.
Exactly right. Plus, why, you know, hurt your knee?
It was tough guy.
Yeah.
It was a tough guy.
It was. And you won.
I just like that you shocked him into stunned silence.
Right.
He's about to attack you, then he gets hit in the head with a grape juice jar.
Right.
And doesn't know what to do after that.
Right. What do you do?
I think the fact that he called this poor innocent woman my whore wife was really, really funny.
And besides laughing, did she have a response to that?
She said, sir, let's just get out of here. And then I went to her house.
We're married.
Take my sauerkraut and get out of here. Yeah.
A year from now, we're going to do nutbag stories. That guy's going to call in. Yeah, this guy hit me in the head with a grape juice bottle.
You know what? Problem. That would have been the best if I lined that up.
Right.
But he's on the next line. Here, let's conference call this guy in.
That would have been cool.
That would have been next level stuff. All right, Brian. Thanks, man. State police were seen investigating a property once owned by Fotos Doulos yesterday. They were digging up the land, and everybody's interested in where is Jennifer?
Exactly. Mm.
So that happened yesterday, and I said, well, we need to talk to Joe Corradino, state's attorney for the Judicial District of Fairfield. Not his case, but want to get his opinion on it.
Right.
And then we get him on the phone, and it turns out he has had a night. Good morning, Joe. Welcome to the show.
Good morning. How are you?
Good. So you've been up for a few hours.
Yeah, unfortunately, we are beginning 2021 the way we ended 2020, which is we had a homicide last night and in Bridgeport, and I make a point of going out to all of those. And last year, we exceeded the number of homicides that we had had in a number of previous years. We closed out the year with 25 homicides, which is a significant number for a small city like that.
Would you say that's because of COVID and people are cooped up and
tense?
Or what would you?
I think that anecdotally that might be true, but it's symptomatic of other problems that we have. I think that a lot of it can be traced back to a new generation of people who are committing offenses, this lack of respect for the rights of others, and really a kind of a contempt for human life that we see in some young people.
So as a prosecutor, I didn't realize that you would go right out to a murder scene. So it's almost like the cops. So the 911 call goes out.
Yeah.
Police get called. As soon as they know it's a homicide, they call a supervisor. Supervisor calls you. Is that how it works?
Essentially, in my district, and each prosecutor in Connecticut is independent, but the way I do it in my district is that they call. I have a staff of police inspectors in my office that assist me in preparing cases and also assist the police. And they'll contact my inspector. He'll contact me. And then both of us will go out there. So that we have eyes on at the beginning of an investigation and to provide assistance and legal support, because the police today are really expected to do a lot more than the old days of just break up fights in bars. They really do have to be experts in the criminal law, procedurally and substantively.
And that's how cases come apart. Something wasn't collected correctly. We saw that in the OJ trial.
Procedure not followed properly.
They were showing pictures of people collecting evidence without the proper gear on.
Right.
Problems in the lab.
Yep.
So you're there to make sure everything gets done in a certain way.
Oh, sure.
So you get called in the middle of the night.
Right.
Like, hey, we got one here.
Right.
And then you show up.
I've had it happen where, I live in Brantford, but my district is Bridgeport, that I've gone out, gone to a scene, gone home, got back into bed, and been called for another one. It's an interesting job, I can tell you that.
Right.
And it gets more interesting, and in some senses more difficult all the time. For example, this past year, we had this police accountability bill.
Right.
And buried in it was the abolition of consent searches on motor vehicle stops and a consent search of the person. And over time, the U.S. Supreme Court has developed the law of search and seizure in a very orderly kind of way. And this bill kind of just took two chunks of that very a detailed process out and said, you can't do it anymore. So that presented a challenge for the police departments and myself and the lawyers in my office went out and we spoke to every police officer in every department in our district. We appeared.
That's funny because the lawmakers didn't.
Right.
Sorry, yeah. Go ahead.
Well, yeah, the lawmakers
I don't want to get you in trouble with your bosses or whoever.
Right, but come on out here.
but this is a challenge because this is one of the ways that we have been interdicting illegal guns on the street.
Yeah.
Last year we had, as I said, 25 homicides in Bridgeport, and I think two of them might have been a stabbing. All the rest were gun violence.
Yikes.
And in none of these cases are people running around with a pistol permit. These are people who are.
And that's how you get those guns, those traffic stops, right?
Yeah. And typically, a police officer would ask permission to search a car if they made a motor vehicle stop for going to a stop sign or something. And very often, they would find a gun that was improperly in the car. Right. And they're not allowed to do that anymore. And then another consequence of that bill was consent to search the person. Now, you heard a lot about stop and frisk in New York and that kind of thing. But the prohibition on searching the person is so expansive that let's say there were a number of people that may have been involved in the situation, and the police were to ask them for DNA samples to exclude them from, say, some trace evidence that was found at the crime scene. If one of those people turned out to be the suspect, we couldn't use that against them because it was taken from their person by consent. And the legislature simply said, you can't ask for consent anymore.
It seems backwards.
It seems like the system's working against what's right.
Yeah.
Let me ask you this. This is Joe Corradino, state's attorney, Judicial District of Fairfield, that covers Bridgeport, Stratford, Fairfield, Easton, Monroe, Trumbull, and Connecticut State Police. Do you get behind the prosecution table? Are you in the courtroom, or do you send your attorneys to do that?
I was appointed back effective May 1st, and I have always been in the courtroom guy. With COVID right now,
right.
Almost none of us are in the courtroom. We're handling a lot of cases virtually.
You have one of those moments like you see on television where you're questioning someone on the stand and you got them. Isn't that a great? I love watching that on TV.
Yeah?
Can you tell us about one?
I had a case one time where the people claimed an alibi. And the whole thing turned on. We were all together. The guy couldn't possibly have been with us. Could have possibly committed the crime because we were all out in a bar, and we were watching the NFL playoffs. And the Philadelphia Eagles were in the playoffs, and that's my favorite team. And blah blah blah.
Right.
So. I began to cross-examine the alibi witness on this, and the alibi witness what bar were you at? It's burned down now.
Really? How convenient.
Oh, this is great.
Of course you have the credit card receipt from the tab. We paid cash.
All right.
I said, well, okay, so you remember precisely a day when your son didn't do anything because you were all together watching the NFL playoffs. That's right. The year following that, the Philadelphia Eagles, your favorite team, were also in the NFL playoffs. What day did they play? So of course, I got it because I had a copy of the newspaper with the time that the game was scheduled for, she couldn't tell me when another equally important day that nothing happened other than a football game. She couldn't tell me about that. Whoops. So,
did you see the episode where it was a television special of the guy who was arrested for murder and he kept saying he was at the ball game, I think a Dodgers game, and it turns out at that game, and this came after he had already been screwed hard and got another attorney,
okay.
He was sitting in jail, it turns out that day that... who's that? That Larry David show, something about enthusiasm?
Curb, yeah.
Yes. They were filming a scene there.
Oops.
And it turns out that this guy was in the section.
Oops.
Oh, my
and
God.
He walks right behind these characters because he didn't have a ticket.
Nice
camera. Had no way of proving he was there. No one remembered seeing him.
Yeah.
He said, well, I went and bought soda. No one remembered him. Showed pictures. Nothing. And this attorney
cleared him.
Found it. And right. It cleared him.
They were going through all kinds of video from, like, the stadium, all the entrances.
Right.
Couldn't find them.
Right.
What were you wearing that day? I don't remember.
And they just happened to be there that day.
In the
filming
section.
That section.
In the section.
And game enthusiasm.
Wild. Yeah. Yeah.
Wild. Well, so it was... I've had cases like that where years ago we had a case where a guy was shooting at a police officer. And the police officer believed he identified the guy who was shooting at him. And that guy was arrested, but he was subsequently interviewed by the police, and he had an alibi. And it turned out that the alibi was substantiated. But when we talked to the guy, he said, well, you know, I think you probably ought to take a look at so-and-so because he's a really good friend of the other guy that you arrested. I think the lesson in these things, especially for prosecutors and for police officers, is not to close your mind right away. I think that, you can narrow the suspects down, but you have to keep an open mind throughout the whole process because you have to account for every piece of evidence, every claim, every fact. And if it doesn't fit, you don't file off the rough edges to make it fit. You kind of have to address why it doesn't fit. And I think objectivity is probably the most critical characteristic that anybody involved in the practice of law, whether it's a prosecutor or a defense lawyer, or a police officer conducting an investigation, should have. It is really easy to create a miscarriage of justice by making up your mind and then backing up into the facts to fit your theory.
Have you ever had a case together? You're very confident about it, of course, because you're prosecuting the person. You're in the courtroom. And as you hear the evidence unfold, you start thinking, well, maybe we got the wrong guy.
Oh, pull your collar a little bit. Yep.
Yeah.
Well, I actually once had a case where we did have the wrong guy. And we tried to throw the case out, but the judge would not enter a dismissal. We entered what's called a nolle prosequi, which means we declined to prosecute it further. But a person, when we do that, a defendant's entitled to a dismissal. And the court would not enter the dismissal because the alleged victim complained. And so the defendant was entitled to an immediate trial. And I knew that the guy didn't do it, but he was sitting in jail. He had been on parole, and when they arrested him, they chucked him back into jail. And what had happened was that a woman had complained that she was robbed in her driveway, she was taken by the police, and a group of people that were standing on the street corner were rounded up, and they shined the spotlight on each of them, and she couldn't identify anybody 10 minutes after the robbery. But the next day, she's looking outside her house and sees a man walk by and says, that's the guy. So she calls the cops. And this is the new shift had come on, and the police reports hadn't caught up. They were still in somebody's in basket. So the police arrested him on site. And when it got to court, we had both sets of reports. So we knew she couldn't make an identification 10 minutes after it had happened. But then the next day, she's saying, that's the guy. And when we checked it out, the guy had been with his girlfriend and, you know, all of his time was accounted for.
Wow. Huh.
So in order to get him out of jail, I put on the case and I put on all the evidence, including the exculpatory evidence. And I didn't ask the jury to find him guilty. I said, go back there and do what's reasonable. They came back with a not guilty.
Good for you.
And the man was let out of jail. But that was the only way to get basically an innocent man out of jail.
We got to go, but we want to have you back on. And I just want to – we're going to ask you to play a little game here. It'll take 5 seconds. And this is your personal opinion, not your professional opinion. It's called guilty or innocent. Photos to us.
Okay. I may have to abstain at some point.
Wow, okay.
Photos to us.
I'm having lunch with the prosecutor of that case today on another matter, and so I'm going to.
He's not
going to
like it if you weigh in on that one,
right?
O.J. Simpson.
I would think that the substantial evidence would say that it pointed toward him, but a jury verdict is a jury verdict,
right? Joe Myers is on, our movie guy. Good morning.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
Good. Morning. I think you had a Twitter battle with our boss.
Oh, again?
Well, I would say a discussion.
Yeah, a really, battle.
We call it battle royale.
Phil described it as a battle, Phil.
Yeah,
well, it's a very important discussion for Keith. Like, you can't get details wrong, especially on the air. Otherwise, he gets nuts. I can't believe he didn't know.
Especially when you talk about movies.
Yeah.
He talks like that all the time.
He does such a good Keith impression.
What happened? Do you have any of the tweets back and forth there?
Basically, Keith was like, I can't believe that no one on the air knows what best box office of the year means. Everyone is wrong, including movie guy Johnny Tags Joe. And Joe's like, this is going by worldwide gross. And Keith is like, no!
Yeah.
No, domestic only. Yeah. No one cares about these weird countries.
And this is the guy who told me to calm down on social media.
Oh, my God. Would that be the best inauguration speech today? No one cares about these weird countries? okay, here's the boss.
Oh, hey.
The box office is skewed for action movies in foreign countries. That's why you can't count the worldwide gross. That's why a movie like Die Hard 3, which blows, does really well because it does really well in China.
Joe,
I think nowadays, you know, the market is so global, and actually we might not have theatrical movies in this country anymore if it's not for China being so movie crazy. I mean, they add hundreds of millions of dollars to the profit of Hollywood, you know. So I think the time has come where we have to acknowledge what grosses all over the world.
Can you imagine if they didn't make fake DVDs?
Right.
But it skews the list. So if you look, if you add these foreign countries, it skews the list. It hurts comedies. It hurts movies that aren't big explosion kind of movies. So that's why just do domestic gross.
You know what this is? You know you have the devil on one shoulder and like heaven on the other shoulder? This is that conversation.
No, but I just think we are listening to the beginning of the next greatest movie review show.
Nice.
You know, instead of like Siskel and Ebert, right. It's like angry and nice, or right. Nice and nutbag.
Right.
What Keith is saying is true. The American movies that tend to do well overseas are not really subtle because, you know, they don't need translation. They want action over there. So that's very true. Romantic comedies traditionally never do well overseas. You know, personal dramas, political dramas set in the U.S., never do well overseas. But I just think in the last 15 or 20 years, that has become such a, China especially, has become such a force in keeping Hollywood profitable that, I don't know, you kind of, you know, people will say a movie is a flop just because it didn't do well here, like Pacific Rim. That was a huge hit in China and was so big that they ended up making a sequel, even though movie press people said it was a flop here. It wasn't a flop at all.
Rim 2?
No, rim job, AJ.
I wanted to say that, but you're on the damn phone.
AJ would watch that.
No, I wanted to say that, but I'm like, can you yell that?
If we're talking aesthetics, I would totally agree with Keith. You know, the taste of foreign moviegoers in terms of what we make in this country maybe is not the best. But to me, you kind of have to be realistic when you're talking about what movies make the most money each year. Like, for instance, Titanic made, I think, another $600 million overseas. I mean, that pushed the movie over $1 billion gross, the overseas money.
Well, here's the issue. You know, this is my bit, and I get to make the rules. And my rules are American release money, the domestic box office.
It's written in crayon, by the way, just so you know.
Yeah.
No sharp objects.
Ashley did watch Schindler's List. So, boss, we'll let you go so you can listen to her and then yell at us in the meeting.
Right.
11 o'clock.
Bye.
Bye.
I'll put my PPEs on now.
So, Joe, Ashley watched Schindler's List.
Now, I didn't think that was the one we were steering her to, but you know, I'd love to hear what she thought of it.
Scott Haney from Channel 3 picked it.
Yeah, he decided like that.
Oh, okay, okay.
Yeah. It was a very long movie.
Oh, my God.
Unfortunately, it went by. Unfortunately,
one of the most impactful movies ever, the first line, it was very long.
The committed 45 minutes, may or more, you know, convenient for me.
Unfortunately, it went by pretty quick because of the horrible nature of what was going on.
Right.
You know, lesson, important for people to know what happened historically in this country so it doesn't happen again. Very sad, just very sad, not an ounce of humanity in that whole story.
Well, Schindler, that was the humanity.
Well, right. Yes. I'm sorry, I meant the Holocaust.
And in a sea of dread, there was this, humanity. A little drop of humanity.
Yeah. Right, little smidgen.
Yeah.
little smattering.
Yeah, it's a tough movie. You know, I mean, it's not something you just kind of watch casually. It's kind of gut wrenching. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah, I think she made a good point that it's not a movie you watch a second time.
Right.
I don't think I have ever watched it again. You know, that's funny you should say that. I liked it a lot. You know, it won Best Picture, but I do not believe I have ever watched it a second time. You're right. It's one of those movies that you just sort of can't face a second viewing of.
It's tough.
Nope.
You're glad you watched it, but...
one and done.
Yeah,
one and
done. Absolutely. Absolutely.
AJ and I will now recommend our pick for the best romance movie ever. Now, this is not a rom-com.
Okay.
Okay.
No comedy.
Straight romance.
Straight romance.
Drama.
No jokes.
Lots of love.
All right. My movie on paper looked pretty good.
Was.
Oh, boy.
It's 1995. Uh-huh. It's Clint Eastwood. I am in.
Unforgiven?
I'm like, oh, Meryl Streep's in it too?
Oh.
Could be good.
Yeah.
And then the title. I'm like, oh, this could be good. The Bridges of Madison County. And I'm like, oh, well, this has to be
real estate.
Clint Eastwood in Germany, and his squad of special forces have to take out these bridges, right?
In Madison County.
In Madison County, Germany.
Right, exactly, right.
And then come to find out, I hear that it's a love story, and it's Clint Eastwood is a National Geographic photographer, never married, no children, kind of travels the world and takes pictures for National Geographic.
Right.
Now, his assignment is to take pictures of the bridges of Madison County, and on that journey, he meets Meryl Streep, who's married, bored, out of her mind married, living on a farm.
Right.
Her husband and kids go off to some, you know, whatever, cow fair festival thing.
Oh, cow fair's a big bag there, yes.
And so now here she is alone. He comes on get to the farm to get directions.
Right.
The next thing you know, bada bing, bada boom.
Nice.
The movie starts with the kids coming into the house after Meryl Streep died of old age.
Oh.
And they're going through the belongings of their mother.
Oh.
And they discover...
She had a journal?
...that she had an affair on their father. And, you know, that part of the movie, I'm like, just cut to Clint Eastwood, please.
Right.
Get these people out. Out.
Did he take pictures?
I get it.
Did he take pictures?
I get it. They're dead. You're reading the papers. Now, let's get to the action.
Get a Nikon, a zoom lens.
I got to tell you, I thought I would never watch this movie in my life. If I lived it five times over, there's no reason to watch this. Jennifer twisted my arm. She's watched so many dumb movies that I wanted to see. I'm like, okay, we'll sit down and we'll watch it. It is a great movie. It's a great love story.
My mouth is agape right now. I can't picture you watching that.
It's a great movie.
I know. I thought, AJ... I get it. I totally get it.
Right.
I also know that there's no way in hell that you'd ever watch it and say, yeah, that was worth it. No,
he's got an old pickup truck, doesn't he?
Yes, he has an old Ford pickup.
All right, that part I'll watch.
And the scenes are great, and he's just a great actor.
Right.
And it's basically him and her, the whole movie. So now you have two Oscar-winning actors spending a lot of time just crafting scenes.
Yeah.
And it's a good story.
Oh.
At the end... I cried.
Did he blow any bridges up?
No bridges were blown up.
Did he burn any?
But as I'm not going to ruin it for people, even though it's from 1995. But there's a moment in the end where you see it was true love.
Oh, my God.
That they experienced.
She made the wrong choice.
You still choking over there? How much oxygen did you lose exactly?
I think she was about to get weepy.
I don't know. I stopped myself because I didn't want to give too much away. It's gut-wrenching at the end because you feel like she made the wrong choice after you find out this moment of true love, and you're just like, oh, no, Meryl.
Clint Eastwood asks her to come with me. Leave this.
Right.
Let's go.
Right.
We'll spend the rest of our lives
together. Get my pickup truck.
She's like, nah. She's thinking he's just saying that. He's going to change his mind.
Right.
It turns out that he never married, and there was... whatever.
This was it for him.
He couldn't
have anything else.
It was it, and everything that followed in his life was spawned from this weekend with her.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very... Yep. Very touching.
I feel touched.
That's a problem.
I feel violated. Right?
What do you think of Bridges of Madison County?
Oh, I think it's a wonderful movie. You know, that's one of the, I think, 20 pictures Merrill got an Oscar nomination for. Clint directed it. You know, and I was just, while you were talking about it, I was remembering that scene where they're in the truck together and they're at the red light, you know, and it's kind of that moment where you're making a decision that will affect the whole rest of your life.
Like a drag racer. Do we race him?
Yeah,
do we
then
not?
The 55 Chevy flipped over.
Right, exactly.
Does she stay or does she go? It's really moving.
Sounds like
a very sexy
song.
Too. It's probably the sexiest Meryl Streep has ever been in a movie. She has a very sensual quality in that picture.
Yeah.
You know, playing an Italian immigrant.
She looks like an owl.
What?
She looks like an owl. Oh,
she does not look like an owl.
Has that look at her, like, mm.
That's what you said about Angela Lansbury.
Yeah. Well, that's why the owl look to them. It's not exclusive to one freaking person.
Yeah.
Like, she's looking for a field mouse.
I love that movie, and I love Clint Eastwood. I think no matter what movie he's in, he's Clint Eastwood.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
It's not like,
he's great.
He's not
know?
Like Daniel Day-Lewis. Like, wow, he's Lincoln over here, and he's my left foot over here.
Right, I'm always waiting for
it's
like,
Clint Eastwood in another scenario of his life.
Right.
You know, this is a different life.
And he's always got a pickup truck. If it wasn't Meryl Streep, it'd be like the orangutan Clyde.
Well, he had the Gran Torino. He's definitely a Ford guy.
Right turn, Meryl.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
All right, AJ, we're ready for your pick now. All this right. better be
well, I remember,
a romantic movie.
I remember it was a snowy night. I did some comedy upstate New York, and I was by myself in a hotel room. I had nothing to do.
Oh, wow.
And it was a snowy night, and I was looking for something to watch. And, you know, it was all, you know, like some cheese documentary and stuff like that.
I like how he has to set it up. I had nothing else I could watch.
Exactly.
Right.
Exactly. Right.
Yeah. Right.
So
there was no Barry Jackson.
No.
The cheese documentary sounds awesome.
It wasn't that type. You know what? If it was a good cheese, maybe, but it was like that round cheese nobody ever eats. That stuff.
Yeah. There's no Chasing Classic Cars.
There was nothing. No. Because right. I had
to. Flipping through.
I had the basic cable in that room. And we were
okay,
6 miles.
Okay, we get it.
Six
You're
miles
a man.
In Canada.
You're okay. a man stuck in a bad situation.
Exactly.
You had to make bad decisions.
I couldn't sleep.
All right.
You know, I'd eaten recently, and I didn't want to have any, like, acid reflux going on. So.
That's right. You just wrestled a bear outside.
Exactly right.
You're tired.
That was my luggage to get into the room. But, yeah. So I'm flipping through the channels, and I ended up watching. I got in, like, a couple minutes late, but that movie, You've Got Mail, with Tom Hanks and and Meg Ryan.
Meg Ryan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's a story about
a good movie.
Meg Ryan works with Edith Bunker, Gene Stapleton. But
that's the hook that kept AJ in.
She wasn't talking like this, Archie.
It's Edith Bunker.
She had a regular voice, which I didn't know she had a regular deep
right.
voice. I guess all the cigars she smoked, I have no idea. But she had this bookstore in a really nice part of New York, in Manhattan. And Meg Ryan works for her at this bookstore. Now, apparently, there's this chain of bookstores that's been buying up and kind of killing the mom-and-pop bookstores.
Oh.
And that's Tom Hanks, who was not dressed as
now,
Woody.
Now, does he live in Seattle?
No. No, that's a Sleepless in Seattle thing.
Oh, all
that's
right.
a different movie. No, he owns, like, you know, he's like the head of this, like, bookstore chain.
Oh.
And he's been killing
the
all
he's...
the... He's the bad guy.
Gotcha.
But apparently what's happening is they are both in this over 30 chat room on AOL, and they've been hooking up, talking to each other.
You've got mail.
You've got mail. Yay. Right? She had no idea that she's talking
with Darth Vader of bookstores.
About to kill the Rebel Alliance bookstore. Exactly. Right. So they've been talking all this time and flirting and stuff like that. And then, you know, they're back and forth. And eventually
it's like Princess Leia and Darth Vader.
Exactly. Right.
Having this great. But plenty of fish experience.
Over a book, right? They both swipe left, yes. And and what ended up happening is, you know, towards the end, I don't remember too much of it, but I do remember towards the end, like, I guess he has his dog, and he's, like, walking a dog, and the dog, they're in, like, some park or something.
Have
like
they met
City.
Yet?
She found out that he was, you know, that he,
okay.
you know, he was
this
this
is
guy.
Great. All right.
At
so
one point,
act one is they set up villain, good guy.
Right.
Right?
Yeah.
And that they're chatting.
Uh-huh.
And then the romance blooms. And then we need the curveball in the middle of the movie where it's like, oh, my God, they're not going to get together.
You find out, oh, my God, you're Mr. Bad bookstore chain. And
right.
I'm a little helpless, you know, Edith Bunker bookstore over here.
No,
and
but Meg Ryan is, where is she in all this?
Meg Ryan works for Edith,
oh,
I said that earlier.
Oh,
yeah.
All right.
Right. It's a good movie. Pay attention. So,
sorry.
So, I sat there.
I'll take some notes.
Okay. So what ends up happening is the bookstore closes. It's very sad. It's empty. She goes back there to gather belongings and everything. Meanwhile, he feels
sad.
I forget exactly. I kind of zoned out a couple of times.
All right. You're being honest. Mayor Aaron Stewart of New Britain. Good morning. How are you?
Hey, good morning.
Hey.
Good morning.
You going to be watching the inauguration today?
Oh, of course. I think you have to, right? I mean, it's one of those things where no matter who the president is, this is our democracy, our constitutional republic at work, and the peaceful transfer of power, maybe, we hope.
Yeah.
Rim shot. Hey!
When you were a kid, because your dad was a mayor, so when you were a kid, you know, some little league players, when they're out in the field and they're hitting balls, they're like, it's the World Series. It's the bottom of the ninth.
In their heads, yeah.
We're down one.
Right.
There's one man on base.
Right.
I got two strikes.
Right.
And poof, right? You picture yourself hitting that home run that wins the World Series.
Yeah, you're the hero.
Did you ever, like, sit there in your bedroom with a hairbrush acting like you're the president?
I'd be lying if I said no.
But she was seeing old-time rock and roll like Tom Cruise and Risky Business.
Right.
I don't know why, how those two are together, but yeah.
For us political junkies or people that, you know, eat, sleep, and breathe politics, today is, you know, it's like the moment that you're looking forward to, the moment that you hope, you know, you're on the winning side of. And it's the day for pomp and circumstance and celebration of, turning a new page and a new chapter. So, you know, for us political junkies, today is a very important day. I have my pearls on today in honor.
Oh, really?
Wow.
Oh, my God. It's almost like watching an Oscar party and putting on a gown or a tux.
My advice to drink heavily.
I mean, watching the Oscars and having a party and getting all dressed up.
All that.
You know, look at you.
Yep.
I wonder, so what, do you remember anything you said in your speech as a young girl, pretending you're president?
Nope.
Well, she
that's a yes.
Right. It was not convincing.
But I'm not sharing.
Well, she thanked the first Ken doll, yes.
Right. Yeah, Ken was her vice president.
Exactly right.
As a Republican.
Ken was the first man, and I was telling him, don't worry, honey, it's going to be okay.
It's going to be okay.
She pulled a string. She wanted to talk.
You just listen to what I tell you.
Right, just nod your head, look pretty.
As a Republican, did you take any heat for what happened January 6th?
Of course. I think, everybody who's a registered Republican did because, you know, unreasonable people, you know, they see the first Republican and they want to blame them. But I also took heat, you know, from others because I condemned it right away. I didn't hesitate. I thought it was absolutely abhorrent to see. You know, there's a way to, you know, you lose. And when you lose, you're supposed to lose with dignity, right? And you win with pride, lose with dignity. I just don't think that there's some people that that know that slogan and what it means. So I didn't hesitate to call it out for what it was. So that's all right. You know what? When you're in politics, everybody hates you no matter what you say. So.
You're right. You're right.
Radio, too, sometimes.
A lot, actually.
We're kind of the same field over here.
You know, it's funny, though. 4 years ago, I couldn't understand how Hillary thought it was everything but her and the Russians and all this.
Right.
You know, like, you lost.
Yeah.
Right? But I now understand how you can feel like, wait a minute, this didn't really happen?
Right, this one was so obvious.
Right, there has to be something else that happened here?
Right, this one was so obvious.
So I feel like every couple of years we all get a taste of the other side of the winning and the losing and the bitter and the...
Right.
Yeah.
Yep.
And, you know, you win some, you lose some, but you have to know that you leave it all out on the field. And you've got to know that, you know, you give it your all. But at the end of the day, you know, you have to be respectful to the person that does eventually take the office. Because whether you like it or not, you know, the office of the presidency should be held in high regard and with high honor, no matter who's in there.
Or...
Hopefully we'll be able to move forward and see that.
Or you can treat him the same way the other one just got treated for the 4 years.
AJ is one of those, he's still on fire.
This ain't over.
It's over,
this
AJ.
This ain't over. Trust
it's
me
over,
on this.
AJ, I'm sorry.
Trust me on this.
About
this
an hour
over.
Ago, I said, AJ, look at the TV. The president's helicopter took him off the right. White House lawn.
Right.
And he's like, oh, he'll be back.
He'll be back.
Maybe even today. Yep. I'm like, oh, geez.
Yep. Now, I'm thinking now a couple of days.
Yeah.
That'll look good.
Well,
that'll look good.
New Britain Mayor Aaron Stewart is on. You must have had a tough time coming in as a very young woman leading a city, right?
You had a curfew, didn't you?
No doubt. You did. Oh, I definitely did. You know, people don't think that you have to work 10 times harder to prove yourself because everybody had these preconceived notions that, you know, I was dumb, ditzy, and didn't know what the heck I was doing. And quite frankly, some people still feel that way, even though I'm in my seventh year. But
that's what parents are for.
Yeah.
It is what it is.
No, but it's interesting because you had a couple, you know, you were a young woman leading a
25.
City.
Right.
25 years old. I remember
she's
it like
being carted at bars.
Yesterday.
Right.
Yeah.
I know.
I feel sure, like she was still clubbing back then.
Right.
Yep.
You had a little posse of, like, crazy ladies.
Exactly.
That's
right.
A yup.
Right. She had an entourage.
I feel like the best part about it, though, is that everyone still thinks I'm only 25, which is great.
That's excellent. Yeah.
Right. You're 26 now, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yep.
Have you ever met a sitting president? I think Obama came to New Britain. Right?
He had the sandwich. Right.
I actually met President Obama, so it was my first year in office. President Obama came to the city of New Britain to speak at Central Connecticut State University. So I got the chance to meet him there. And then I got called to actually go to the White House to have a meeting with President Trump about the Opportunity Zone Economic Development Program. And so that was an awesome experience, too.
Meeting Obama... How many, what's that like, the security beforehand? I remember when we were going to interview a sitting vice president in Senator Lieberman's office, the amount of information we had to give over for a Secret Service.
And the guy with the plastic glove was not very friendly at all.
That was not a good time.
No, I'm still walking funny.
What did you have to go through? Is it a different experience for a sitting mayor?
Nope, same thing. You still have to go through the full vetting process, and you have to give them, you know, basically the blood of your firstborn child in order to get through and have them approve you. But you have to give them, you know, there's a whole questionnaire that you have to fill out.
I couldn't sit at all afterwards, to be honest with you. Yeah.
When you're actually physically going into the White House, it's different, too. It's more information that you have to give.
Right.
How does it smell? Does it smell musty or what?
No, it didn't smell musty at all in there.
It's an old building, you know.
Did you have to put a pin on? Because, AJ,
you remember that we had a pin.
We had to wear pins.
Right, this metal pin.
And the Secret Service said, if those come off, you're going to be in trouble. Don't lose these.
I squashed mine so hard, it's still stuck to my suit. I pressed on the pliers.
I just kept touching my, like, is it still there? Is it still there?
Mine's woven into the cloth.
Right, because I thought I was going to, like, wake up somewhere in a basement cell, hogtied with water dripping on my head.
Well, usually I pay for that.
Like,
no. But...
I don't know where the pin went. I had a pin, I swear to God.
No, I pictured hearing two shots and the sounds are pew, pew.
I feel like that was a joke. I'm on security. They're like, watch this. I'm going to give him the pen.
It could have been.
It's super important.
Yeah.
Watch him for the next 20 minutes.
Okay. It really could have been.
Well, they saw me squeezing my butt cheeks the entire time. That's
so
sure.
Your interaction with President Obama, Mayor, what was that like? Was it brief? What did he say to you? Because you were 26 at the time.
It was brief. It was kind of cool because when he was speaking to the crowd at Central, he gave me a shout out, you know, in a way that only President Obama could, you know, and he was a very great, you know, orator. He spoke very eloquently and he's like, and here she is, your mayor. I'm like, oh, this is kind of cool. The president is calling me out.
And then he said, holler back if you hear me.
Oh my God. Yeah. I would have a video of that. I would make it one of those, Tupac videos, you know,
nice.
And I would have him introducing you
nice.
All the time.
Right.
One of those,
somewhere.
Yeah.
It's out there somewhere. But my other interaction with him, it was very brief. It was in, you know, kind of like a group of people. So it was a few minutes and I did get to give a gift to him. I gave him a Stanley Black & Decker, a Stanley measuring tape. those are made in the city of New Britain. Cool. Still,
every guy wants that.
Yeah. Would President Obama, who just seems like he was always an intellect, would he even know what that is? Like, what do you do with this?
This primitive thing you've handed me. I'm not quite sure.
What is it?
What does it do?
Yeah. Oh, could you imagine, like, if I'm a Secret Service agent and you're a Republican handing my guy a tape measure, I'm jumping on
get
that
down
thing.
The ground!
Right. Get down!
I had to show it to them before I could present it to him, and I had to send them pictures of it like a week beforehand so they knew what to expect.
Yeah, she had to demonstrate, like, wow, this chick's being kind of forward.
The slide rule.
I don't know if I can help you out there, lady, but yeah, thank you. You're ready for the president, good. That's for sure, yeah.
Yep. Mayor Aaron Stewart of New Britain's on. And then you go to the White House. That has to be a surreal experience. Did you go into the Oval Office?
I did. That was definitely a surreal experience.
What is it like what we see on TV in the movies?
What'd you
see?
It is. It's pretty accurate. But it was a show. It was an honor. You know, I got to sit in one of the side chambers and actually participate in a pretty productive roundtable to identify what the city of New Britain's needs were underneath this economic program. Kind of talk from a perspective of a mayor of a poor city in the United States. And then they brought us into the Oval Office, and we got to have, it was with a group of about 12 other mayors, and we got to have some one-on-one time with President Trump.
One-on-one?
It was definitely it was surreal. It was cool. He asked if, you know, he says to me, this is funny. He says to me, do you have any questions about the Oval Office? Like, is it your first time in here? I said, yeah. Like, do you have a red phone? Is that true?
Right. Cool. The red phone.
Like Batman.
And so, you know, you see in the movies, right? Everybody,
yes.
They have the red phone. It automatically, you know, calls up missiles somewhere. So.
Or Grubhub.
He looks at me and he says, I don't have a red phone, but I have that red button on the a desk right there. And I'm like, well, what does it do? He goes, well, push it. I'm like, how am I going to push
no.
This
right.
I'm like, this is, you're signing me up for something here. He goes, oh, come on. He's like, just push the button. And so I push it and it makes this like loud ringing noise. And everyone in the room just goes dead silent. I'm like, this guy just set me up for complete failure. And he looks at me and he goes, oh, come on. It's just if you want a Diet Coke or something. You want a Diet Coke?
I would have thought it would say that was easy.
Nice. Wow, that's fun. Well, hopefully we'll have a good experience with the next 4 years, right?
That's all that we can hope for at the end of the day.
And then one more question, Mayor. Your favorite romantic movie would be?
My favorite romantic movie?
Not a romantic comedy.
Right.
Like a romance movie.
Right, there's no laughter at all.
Yeah.
Intentionally.
The Notebook.
Good choice.
Oh, I've heard of it.
You haven't seen The Notebook?
I'm guessing there's a Notebook in it.
I didn't use mine in school. I don't want
someone,
to.
Hold on. Let me guess what this is. So somebody dies and then they read through their notebook.
Damn
it. So what happens?
Sort of.
Kind of?
Yeah, kind of.
I made doodles in mine in school.
it's a good romantic one.
Really?
You know, if I had to pick another one that everyone probably knows, I mean, come on, Titanic, classic.
Yeah.
You know, that's true. I never thought of that. That is
to me,
it's more of a historical event.
Right.
And they put the love story in to get
action adventure, too.
Mayor Stewart to watch the movie.
Definitely right. Action.
Yeah. Exactly right.
What can we do to get Mayor Stewart to watch this movie?
Right. Well, let's put in
sink
Jack
a ship,
and Rose.
Right.
Right.
We'll sink a ship.
So, all right. We're going to have AJ watch The Notebook and report back to us.
Oh, hell no.
Yes. Yes, oh, hell yes, no. Yes.
No. My time is too important. That's the crap you give Ashley.
All right. Good morning, President Trump.
Good morning, Chaz and AJ. You know, I have to tell you, the timing of all this transfer of power stuff, it's pretty crappy. Pretty crappy, considering Joe Biden is getting inaugurated just before I was about to unveil my health care plan. Just sad.
Very sad.
Sad timing. And not only that, with all the things I've been busy with, you know, getting everything moved out of the White House, I barely had enough time for Melania to slap my hand away and refuse to have sex with me in the Lincoln bedroom again.
How are you processing all this?
Well, I will tell you, it's very sad. Very sad. It's kind of hard to believe, but I guess it's true how the old saying goes, time really flies by when you've had multiple scandals bordering on treason on a weekly basis for the past 4 years.
Yeah, that's true.
Not sure who came up with that saying, but it's very true.
It's a great T-shirt. I know that, yeah.
We heard you were busy last night with pardons.
I think I have somewhere in the neighborhood of like 100, 150. Well, minus one, you know, after Phil Spector died.
Right.
In all fairness, only the best people get my pardons. I want everybody to know that this list of pardons is very fair and balanced and very diverse. Very diverse list made up of nice blend of wrongfully accused African-American and Latino prison inmates and around 80 heavily politically sucking up white guys.
Yeah, we believe you.
Good balance, yeah.
Do you regret not greeting Joe Biden at the White House today?
No, not at all.
Disrespectful.
Look, how can we be sure Joe Biden isn't actually Antifa pretending to be Joe Biden, huh? Have you thought about that?
Yeah,
no. You're speaking AJ's language right now.
I'm with you, man.
You're a very weak journalist. That's why you didn't ask that question.
Well, we're not journalists.
What?
I don't regret not being there one bit, and neither does the First Lady. Yeah, and did you realize Melania, you know, by not meeting with Jill Biden, I'm sorry, the fake Dr. Jill Biden, got to show respect.
Right.
She will become the first topless model not to invite the incoming First Lady to the White House.
Wow,
what a tremendous groundbreaking stat.
Should be in the history books.
That's huge, yeah.
History books.
What do you think of the inauguration events they put together? Lady Gaga, Jennifer Lopez, Justin Timberlake, John Bon Jovi, Garth Brooks.
What an amazing star-studded lineup of crappy, irrelevant pop stars, an old balding country singer, and a guy who was nominated for an Academy Award for talking to a volleyball. Really.
That's true, yeah.
Tom Hanks.
Stellar.
John Bon Jovi.
Wilson. Yeah.
John Bon Jovi's going to be there?
Yeah.
Yes. You know, we used to be great friends, right up until I accidentally deported his bass player, Tico Torres, in an INS raid a few months ago.
That'll do it.
Such a grudge holder.
It hurts, yeah, sometimes.
We heard that there are plans to raise, is this right, $2 billion for your Donald J. Trump Presidential Library?
Excuse me. That is the Donald J. Trump Presidential Library, Resort, and Casino. Thank you very much.
Oh, okay, see?
Well, this sounds like a fun one, though.
Yeah.
We're going to have some of the hottest librarians / cocktail waitresses that you've ever seen. Believe me.
$2 billion. $2
billion. Yeah, $1 billion for me and one for my library.
Okay. Seems fair.
You know, when you think about it, it's not that pricey, considering that it's all tweets and no books. You know, there's going to be some periodicals in there, too. And when I say periodicals, I mean a few hustlers from Stormy Daniels.
It would be just tweets.
It would be, yes. All on the wall. Yeah.
Yeah.
Greatest tweets, yeah.
All right.
That's nice.
Well, they would have different books in categories.
Exactly. Yes.
Tweets against the media,
right.
Tweets against.
Oh, of course, it'll be organized.
The media section, yes, exactly right.
Well, I'm afraid that's all the time we have. Safe travels to Florida.
Thank you. But before we go, my team is trying to get us one more impeachment. We could really go out on top if we could leave with the hat.
That would be really
Wouldn't
amazing.
That be nice?
So, yep. Yeah. Well, good luck with that and safe travels to Florida.
All right. Later, losers. All right.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.